the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, good afternoon. This is the world's greatest podcast. It is Daniel J. Dokic and the great Seth Greenberg coming to you live from various places across this great nation of ours. Seth Greenberg, couple of things on my mind. First and foremost, your thoughts on the TBT.
It's incredible. It really is. I mean, like, think about the game yesterday. The money team, five NBA players, 40 points in the first quarter. The Elam ending gets you every time. You talk about a game of runs. And then, I mean, like, Ott Elmore from The Herd, he's like a cult figure. He might have taken over for Travis Deal. I mean, really. I mean, like, he's every day, you know, rec league, Sunday pickup, go have a beer after the game or two or three or four. But that game was unbelievable. And Ja'Cory Williams, am I wrong in thinking like Ja'Cory Williams, if you put him in an NBA game, or Mike Dom, if you put him in an NBA game, those guys would get buckets? The TBT is unbelievable. Every game has its own identity, its own personality. It's been unbelievable.
All right, I got a question for you. And this is going to go against you and every guy in America, all right, that follows basketball. Do we say that people from Philly are junkyard dogs just because they're not very good? Like, I coached against Temple. I've watched all these teams. They're all right. But every time you hear somebody from Philly, a junkyard dog.
Not everyone from Philly is.
This means that they're not very good to me.
I don't know. I'll tell you, that Philly team is pretty good. They know how to play. I think when I think of Philly guys, here's what I think of. I think of Philly guys, I think of guys that know how to play. When I think of Philly guys, I think, I do think guys, the good ones, like, look, hey, a bad player from anywhere is a bad player.
Right.
All right. We're talking about the good ones. The good Philly players are guys that know how to play, that are competitive, compete at a high level. And, you know, the bad players, bad players. Who wants to talk about bad players anyway?
See, it's like
Like to me, Dan, like those Temple teams, they had an underdog mentality. That they had one or two guys take all the shots, and they had three guys rebound the ball. I mean, that's just the way they played. But they were, they were hard to play against. Yeah. Villanova's teams are opposite way. They're a very good defensive team. They shoot a zillion threes. So,
how many guys are from Philly?
Well, Brotherly Love is all Philly guys.
No. I'm talking about, you mentioned Villanova. How many guys are actually from Philly on those Villanova teams?
Well, Colin Gillespie was from Philly.
Is Ryan he from Archie Philly, or is he from outside Philly? Of Philly?
No, those guys are Philly guys.
Where was Philly. Archie Diacono from?
Just outside of Philly. His family.
Where was Chris Jenkins from?
Chris Jenkins is a D.C. guy. Josh Hart was a D.C. guy. I mean, those guys
where
were
Where was the big – yeah. I mean, that's what I – look, I'm not criticizing, but sometimes we get into things like when I coached in the MAC, the most overrated player to have was a Detroit guy. Everybody talked about Detroit guy. Detroit guy, there's one or two, but I get a kick out of it. It's like you come from a city, we give you a pass because you're not very good. I think the Brotherly Love team is really good, and I think their game against
the Marquette Eagles.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the game of the game of the tournament, in my opinion, Seth. I do.
I did Brotherly Love last year. Those guys have a great feel for how to play. They really do. I'm just telling you. I mean, they don't take bad shots. Guys come in and play together. They're great guys. I mean, and they're all older guys. And then, when you talk about Philly guys, some guys played at Drexel. Some guys played at Ryder. Some guys played at Temple. It makes no difference. Actually, their better players last year were the guys that were from Ryder. Just the way it is. And Franz Mazzanetta, who played for Drexel, who was terrific, who couldn't get back in the States in time to clear the bubble for the TBT.
Yeah, I think it's fast. I just had to. Everybody, that's all I ever hear is junkyard dunk. I'm like, all right, well, play hard.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What did you think of Overseas Elite yesterday?
Good enough, Miss DJ Kennedy. I don't know why. Good enough. Like, particularly the way the whole thing is fallen, Seth. I think they're good enough to win. I think sometimes first game, you know, is the hardest game. For some reason, I always felt like, you know, they had a maturity. I don't know how to describe this. It's like that Supreme Court justice said about pornography. I don't know how to describe it, but I know it when I see it. It's the same thing with maturity in basketball. Like, I always felt like Overseas Elite was above everybody else in terms of their approach. Like, we're expected to win. I didn't feel that, but it's one game. It's their first game. They'll be right there. I mean, they may win the whole thing. You, what do you think?
I was pretty impressed. I thought that Pujetta was really good. I thought that, you know, he had a little Kyle Fogg in him in terms of he could get a shot anytime he wanted. And Fogg made a lot of big shots. McCollum made a lot of big shots for Overseas Elite. I thought Bobby Brown was pretty good. Justin Burrell is who he is. He's going to play hard. I thought the kid, Dakari Tucker, was outstanding for them. And he's going to be a big part of it. And then Joe Johnson. I mean, I like, you know, the thing I liked about, yeah, Joe Johnson, 18 years in the NBA, seven-time All-Star. And you know what? He just played like one of the guys. Like, you know, he didn't, you know, come into this thing and, you know, think, yeah, I'm going to take the game over. I mean, he had four assists in the first half. He had a couple of rebounds. They posted him a little bit. We saw a little bit of ISO Joe, but not a ton. I like the way they played. I thought their approach was pretty good. I like Mark Hughes, the guy who coaches that team, who played, I guess he played at Michigan.
Oh, yeah. He was good.
He was a good player. And I like the way he carried himself. I like the way he coached his team. I like, you know, in talking with him the last few days, he's just a really good guy that is having fun with it. I still think they've got that identity and the DNA of the Overseas Elite, but DeAndre Kane, DJ Kennedy,
yeah.
It's hard to replace those guys because when the game was on the line, those guys were so good.
Right.
So
what'd you think of the massive comeback? You mentioned on Elmore. That comeback, was it 14 or 16 to 2 run to end it?
Yeah.
It was dead in the water, came back, dead in the water, final comeback. Heard that gets the win, Seth. I personally loved it. I'm not the biggest Dan Nurse fan. What's that?
David Nurse.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting is that, you know, the one thing about the Elam ending, you say it all the time. I always hear you say it. You say that, you know, once you get into the Elam ending, you know, if you don't play with a purpose and all of a sudden a team makes a run, it seems like the air is sucked out of the arena.
Yeah. And
there's no people in the arena, but, you know, they were having just empty possessions. Like, they thought the game was over, and they were just playing a play. And in the Elam ending, you played a play, and all of a sudden people are chipping away at it, and then they missed two. Devin Williams missed those two free throws, which was a big thing. And then, I mean, like, I thought they did a great job down the stretch, quite honestly. I mean, the last play was good. The underneath out of bounds play were good. How about Chris Coakley and Jacory Williams? Are those guys combined for 62?
You know, hey, Seth, one of the things that you just continually get amazed at, I think, a lot of names playing against Ott Elmore, John Elmore, right, and the kids that you mentioned. But names don't matter. And I'm going to tell you, in certain regards, body type doesn't matter. I mean, you got guys that know how to play basketball. You got guys that know how to play pick and roll. You get a couple guys that are athletic around the rim. And you hang in there. Like, that's the most important thing, is it not? You know, like that old KGB, hanging around. You got to hang in there. And then in the end, you're kind of, I don't know, do you think it's a we got nothing to lose kind of thing for her that? Do you think that's part of what it was?
I think it took time for them to settle in. Look, they gave up 40 points in the first half. And almost like, in my opinion, the money team got seduced into thinking it was going to be so easy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they give up a couple transition buckets. They give up a three. They take a couple of bad shots. And then all of a sudden, like, and Dan D'Antoni had a great line. He called it hillbilly ball. That's what the Herd played. Hillbilly. But he said those guys, because of the way they play, because of the way they were coached, you got to remember, that's a group of guys that played together in AAU basketball. in West Virginia Wildcats. Then a group of them that went to Marshall. And then, you know, one of the best players, Steve Britta Browning kid, didn't even play.
Right.
Because he rolled his ankle. And that guy scored 1,700 points in college, 900 rebounds and 250 assists. But they're used to playing that way. Like they like Dan D'Antoni made a great point. He said, these guys will be fine. He said, they know it's a game of runs. They can go on a 10-0 run. They're just going to keep on playing. He said, well, this is just hillbilly ball. We just keep on playing. And that's kind of exactly the way it was. And I thought that the money team a little bit, like that was the first game I saw that guys got chippy and didn't respect each other and what they were doing.
Yeah, you know, hey, Seth, that's kind of common, though. I mean, with first-time teams in this tournament, like everybody goes in thinking the positives. We're on ESPN. We get a chance to play again. I'm going to show out. Then the real is, well, I'm sitting on the bench. Well, I'm not getting enough shots. Wait a second. And then it gets exasperated, as you and I know as coaches very well, when you start losing. And I think I've said this before. There are teams like Brotherly Love. There are teams like Carmen Screw, even though they lost. There are teams like Red Scare. There are teams like Overseas Elite that are organizations that have a culture to them. Then there are teams that get put together. Those teams that get put together can win, but it takes a special chemistry to get it done. And we saw that with Big X. We saw that with the money team. It's not uncommon first time around or when you're changing personnel often. It's not uncommon at all to see it.
You don't have a core group. Let me ask, what was Andrew's biggest takeaway from his experience?
His biggest takeaway was Dockage's self-reflect and self-blame. So his takeaway was everything is his fault. You know, from playing time to what he should have done. And that's what we do. Like I learned working for Calvin Sampson that's not how every coach is. That's how Bob Knight was. That's how I was. It's always my fault when we lose. So that's how he is. And frankly, his takeaway was, you know what? The bubble thing was really smart. Not the most fun thing in the world. Not the easiest thing in the world. But if you're going to have sports, that thing worked pretty good, man. That was actually, if you're going to ask me the biggest takeaway, that was it. That and the fact that, you know, the play is better. The coaching is better. The game is the games themselves are getting better and better and better. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know what? And let's not over or underestimate Herd back, because I think they do have three front court guys. Zach Smith
right.
Zach Smith was 5-for-5, 4-for-4 from the field, made a 3, runs and jumps, great in those ball screens, active, athletic. You know, Chris Coakley is a very good player. I mean, like, yeah, he'll hang a little bit, but, I mean, he bangs around, gets a rebound. I mean, and then Zachary Williams just plays. I mean, that dude just, he just goes out and plays. I mean, it's actually fun. It's really fun to watch him. So, and then you got, you know, John Elmore is a very good player. So, I mean, you know, that team has good players. And they don't have a ton of them. And, they don't all look the role. But that team is a pretty good team. Now, you mentioned Golden Eagles. You've seen all the teams now. Golden Eagles, best team. I mean, like, Travis Tinder didn't play the other day. And they got Dwight Bikes, very, very good. They got DJO, very, very good. They have Jameel Wilson, very, very good. They've added some front court help. How good are they?
I think Luke Fisher, I said this on a broadcast, is going to have influence down the road here if they're going to be good, just because of his size. Seth, you may totally disagree with this, and I would not blame you for disagreeing with this, but I believe Dwight Bikes is the best player in this tournament. I'm not saying he's going to have the best numbers, but I'm saying if you're going to say to me, all right, give the ball to somebody in the Elam ending to make a play, the list of people that would be ahead of Dwight Bikes for me isn't very long at all. Not even, I mean, I just think he's quicker
Where would you put Dom in that list?
Oh, he's, yeah. I mean, Dom is right there too. Bikes has been doing it in this league. I'm anxious to see, and I got to see Dom
back in the NCAA tournament in Boise against Ohio State when he almost single-handedly led him to a victory. So he's not afraid of a moment. I would put him as 1A or 2, but I'm telling you, Seth, the combination of Darius Johnson Odom and Dwight Bikes to me, and then you added Mo Aker in there, that's winning. Here's what I really liked about him, Seth. Their aggressiveness, their hand action on the defensive end between Bikes, Odom, and Aker is fan-freaking-tastic. And let's be honest, if you can keep your man in front in modern-day basketball, you're in good shape. And that's what I saw them do in that game. They can keep people in front.
Yeah, guarding the ball is obviously huge. Then you don't have to overhelp. You're not going to give up open threes. And I mean, you're not going to give up offensive shot, seven shots. I mean, yeah, I think as I watch them just as a team, they probably are the most complete because, I mean, they practice. They had training camp. They played together before. I mean, they understand it. And I think there's a great pride. I mean, they're as prideful as an alumni team as I've seen. But
I agree.
I'll tell you the other team that seems like they're extremely well coached and play with tremendous pride and purpose. And that's the House Paint. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Andres Felice, he plays hard. I mean, hard. And they get Garrett off the bench, who's played well. And Dom is absolutely terrific. And the stuff they run to get Dom freed up and create mismatches. Dom's not – the way he scores, he makes threes, he drives closeouts, he plays off the lane, and he can play in the block. I mean, like, you throw him in an NBA game in the right system, he's going to score 15 points. I don't know if he's going to guard, but he's going to score 50 points. And Andres Felice, that dude plays – I mean, he plays hard. And that team plays hard defensively.
Hey, Seth, I think Andre Felice is one of the biggest surprises to me personally. I did games with Andres Felice. I thought he was a nice player. I thought he was a guy that did a lot of decent things. I didn't say good things. I just said decent things. Guarded decent, rebounded decent, ran the floor decent, shot decent. Now, I think Andre Felice is a guy, I don't know where it's going to be, but I think he's playing himself, if people are paying attention internationally, I think he's playing himself into a contract somewhere. Seth, I was texting with Brad Underwood, the head coach at Illinois, and he's like, Dan, I'm telling you, man, one of my all-time favorite guys to coach, just a winner in everything we did, every drill, every this. So, hey, give me – you think about the combination of Malcolm Hill, who I love what he said before the tournament, Seth. He lost 30 pounds. He said, I'm much more charismatic, much more outgoing, and I say it all the time, you know, you don't do anything great without enthusiasm, and he's bringing that, and he's the third all-time leading scorer, and he still has it. You think about him, Dom, and Felice, and you've got guys that can do a hell of a lot of things. And lastly, Mike Latulla, again, I got a little bit of crap from some college coaches, but I don't care. He did more for Mike Dom on offense in the first 10 minutes of their first game than I've seen some millionaire head coaches do for their star player in an entire game. And where Mike Dom went, where he started, the different things that Mike Latulla did with him, honest to God, it was a coaching clinic, Seth. It really was. And I'm not betting against them. I think they're pretty damn good, and I think they're pretty damn tough.
I think they're tough. I think they're competitive. I think they got a bunch of guys who are tough matchups. Dom's a hard matchup. Hill's a matchup. Yeah. They're a matchup, hard matchup defensively. I'll tell you the other team that's interesting that I think that you talk about a culture and identity and the play together. Sound Like Cancer's good.
Yeah.
They're good. And I'll tell you what, you know, we talk about Keen all the time because, you know, the ball's in his hands all the time, and he is good. And he's great in Elam ending because he put so much pressure on the defense. Remy Abel makes shots. Mo Creek makes shots. Eric Thompson, with Diamond Stone out, Eric Thompson from UOP, he was great. He had 10 rebounds the first game, but this past game, I mean, he scores around the basket. He scores off of ball screens. He gets to the offensive glass. He's a really, really good defender. He's a big body. You know, I mean, and he's just out there playing his rear end off. I'm really impressed with that team. And I think in a close game, with Keene on the court and Thompson in a ball screen, and you know, how do you guard it? Do you force the ball away from it? Do you switch it? Do you trap it? I mean, you got Abel who can make a shot. You got Creek who can make a shot. They've been a surprise alongside House of Payne.
Let me ask you a question. This will be pretty much our last podcast before there's a winner. Who wins?
Ooh, man. I'm gonna say Golden Eagles. I think they're the most complete. I just like their team. I like their team. I like their purpose. I like their ability to defend. I think they're a very, very good team. Who do you like?
I'm gonna take, and this is probably I don't know what the odds would be, but I'm gonna take House of Pain. I watched something in them that I really liked. Look, you and I both know it's up in the air. The Overseas Elite wins it. Would you be surprised? Hell no.
No.
If the Golden Eagles win it, would you be surprised? Hell no. I mean, right? I mean, you know. But I'm going to go with House of Pain just because when I watched them, there was something there that I really liked about them liking each other. And Seth, you and I have talked about this so many different times in different ways. You got to have a fit, right? You got to fit. Your team has to fit, right? And I feel like that team really does fit, and I'm anxious to see them continue to play. Hey, I got to ask you a couple things, okay?
Shoot.
I'm from Gary, Indiana. In Gary, Indiana, we called a fake ID a Rudy Clay. Rudy Clay was he was eventually a mayor, but you'd go to Rudy Clay's town council office, and he would, for $15, fix you up a fake ID. Have you seen this whole thing with Zion Williamson and alleged payments? And have you seen the ID that they're saying is Zion Williamson, where they got the height and the weight mixed up?
I haven't seen that, but let me ask you, do you doubt that the family got paid?
No, I know. God, no. I mean, you look at where they went from living to where they live. And I think people assume that that's Duke doing the payment. And Seth, I think you've been very good at clearing all that up. I mean, you go from AAU team to AAU team, shoe company to shoe company. You're getting paid by all when you're Zion Williamson, right? So it's not necessarily Duke making the payments.
Yeah, here's a couple things. I mean, his stepfather basically used his celebrity and basically created games. And for those games, he promoted those games and got paid. I mean, it's kind of similar to what RJ Barrett's family did when Duke went to Canada to play the national team. I mean, I think RJ Barrett's dad is involved in the Canadian national team, and I'm sure, you know, he was very heavily involved in the promotion of those games. But I think Zion Williams' stepfather created these games, and then he said, you know what, you want my son, you're going to put people in the stands, I want to get paid. And I also think that the group of people that tried to hire to represent him probably to get in the door probably gave me either an A in advance or paid him and paid the family. So did Zion know that? I don't know. But I'd be shocked if that's not the way that these monies transpired. And I think what the group that was trying to represent him prior, it's real simple. They don't want to go to court. You know what they want? They want a settlement. Zion Williamson, I don't know how much he's worth in terms of marketing, but, you know, they want their money back, and they probably want $4 or $5 million because that's what he potentially could have been worth. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I completely agree with that. All right, let me ask you this, Seth. Dickie Vitale came on my show, talked about college basketball starting in October. What are you thinking?
I actually listened to an interview with Dan Gavitt and Andy Katz. He said originally that was maybe potentially something that they were going to look at, but because of the outbreak right now, that's going to be unrealistic, that they feel that we need more time to get the virus under control. I think it could start a little early. And I do think now that it could start without students on campus. Look, every school in the country has on campuses, and every school in the country has students, not athletes, students enrolled in a ton of online classes. So if there are a few people on campus or it's just online classes, actually that's like creating a bubble in a lot of ways, especially for the sport of basketball, you know, saying that potentially maybe there's a vaccine come January. So you know, I don't think we're going to start in October. We could start earlier, like maybe, you know, here's my gut feeling. I don't know anything. I say we don't start until after Thanksgiving. No one will be on campus. Bring your guys back the second week. And you might miss Christmas. Players might miss Christmas, but you're actually starting up when no one's on campus, when you're basically practicing in a bubble. And then you go from there with league play beginning in January. That's my gut feeling. What's yours?
My gut feeling is, I swear to God, Seth, I don't know. And I'm not trying to be, you know, I'll give you an opinion. I think, you know, I've proven that over the years. But I honestly don't have a feel for it. I wish I did. I wish I could say, hey, look, here's what I think is going to happen. But I really, Seth, I don't know. Everything is so negative because of the announcement yesterday with the Big Ten only going to league games, and the announcement the other day of the Ivy League not having fall sports. But I can look at it another way. Seth, the NBA is starting up, whether you like whatever, NHL getting ready to go. It is this month, July, that NFL camps are going to be open. Major League Baseball is starting up now. Golf is going. The question is, do they finish? And that's the question. However, having said that, it is a positive that these leagues are starting up. Except I said forever ago, and I think you and I both said this on this podcast, and I don't know if this makes us good guys or bad guys, but I said, I'm not going to put this on you. I'll take whatever he comes with it. I said 3 or 4 weeks ago, college sports will be determined by what happens with the coronavirus after these protests, whether, you know, silent protests, the riots, whatever was happening in major cities where large groups of people were gathering. And I think you take the social issues aside, and I've said this forever, and you say, all right, the CDC, Dr. Fauci, everybody has said no large gatherings. Well, we saw large gatherings. We saw large gatherings in major cities, which means there's a lot of people going out to their own towns. You know, everybody that was protesting downtown Indianapolis wasn't from downtown Indianapolis. People came from all over, same with New York, Boston, wherever. So now we've seen a spike. I don't think that helps sports, taking the social injustices or justice causes away. I'm just talking about large groups gathering and what the ramifications are. So now we're seeing it. Had we not seen spikes, I don't think you would have seen anything out of college football other than we're going to play. But that's the reality that we live in. So my answer to you is, I literally have no idea. Could there be a somewhat vaccine? You know, 180,000 people died of the flu in 2018 in the first 6 months, even though we had a vaccine. So I don't know, Seth. I mean, there's so many numbers that get thrown at you. I just don't know. And I gave you a long-winded answer, and I apologize.
No, I mean, look, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, like, I think the world we live in, there's a couple things that have to happen. If we're gonna play, people need to wear masks. People need to have social distancing. People need to have discipline. People need to have respect of what's going on. That's number one. Number two is that the biggest question for universities, it's liability.
Right, right.
And, you know, the presidents on these campuses, I don't even know. I think it's above the presidents. I think it's the boards. I think the boards are going to have to make really, really difficult decisions. I don't think it's a bad thing that the Big Ten decided, you know what, we're only going to play league games, because that buys them time. And I think what everyone's trying to do is buy time. Buy time to see if a vaccine is available. Buy time to see if the surge can be gotten under control. Buy time to see if the student's going to be on campus. And that's what people are doing right now. And then buy time to see what happens with the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and everything else. Because there's no game plan. There's no cliff notes. Everything is being done hit and miss. And that's why this thing that's going on with the TBT is so impressive, because if I'm the NBA, if I'm Major League Baseball, if I'm Major League NHL, if I'm any team sport, if I, at the end of the TBT, sit down with John Mugar and Albert Hall, then you're not doing your job. because all the people that are doing it are trying to create a protocol are speculating. Two things we need to have. We need to be versatile. We need to have agility. Versatility and agility with what's going on because there is so much unknown. But you know what? They got it. They're getting it done in Columbus right now. Not to sit down with people that have actually done it and learned from what they learned over the last 11 days would be foolish.
Totally agree. I assume they are.
As of yesterday, I talked to Albert Hall, who runs the NBA Summer League. He has not received. He's got calls from general managers. He's got calls from coaches. He's got calls from players. He has not gotten one phone call from the NBA.
That's not right. That shouldn't be. I know that Adam Silver's our most, revered commissioner because he kisses everybody in the league's ass. And, he's all about the players and all that kind of stuff. But that league should be all over the TBT because, let's be honest, from what I have been able to gather, their bubble is going to be somewhat similar. It's going to be in one place. They're going to move people from one area to the other area, the hotel, to the Walt Disney World, to the facility. So it's very, very similar. And if the NBA has, in fact, not gotten a hold of Mugar, not gotten a hold of Hall, then they're negligent because this is a perfect, this basically a trial run for you.
Let me ask you this. Andrew was in the bubble for 6 days or so.
Yep.
All right. And obviously, the one thing that kind of jumped out at me with the whole thing is the first day guys went into the bubble and they had a 48-hour quarantine, I think, at first. Mm-hmm. And feeding the players, they basically fed them more institutional food, I would say, just because they had.
Yeah, but you could get DoorDash. You could order out.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not talking about TBT, but you saw players complaining about the food. And, like, here's the deal. Everyone, if this thing's going to work, you're going to have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Like if this is going to work, then you know what? You're going to have to make some sacrifices. And you're going to have to make some decisions. You're going to have to make some choices. And we all have to do that. Like, even fighting a virus right now, states open up and people went overboard. So, like, here's the deal. It's real simple. It's, make good decisions. Like, you don't have to go to the bar with 400 people. You don't have to do certain things that you normally do. And you're going to have to give up some things that you normally do for the good of the group and for our ability to basically have a chance to live a more normal life with the things that we enjoy. So, like, the NBA players and the players at TBT and every other sport, they better get ready to be comfortable being uncomfortable because what they're being asked to do is not comfortable. And what we're being asked to do as a society is not comfortable. But if we're going to be able to survive this pandemic and find a way to live with it, we're going to have to make some decisions. And being comfortable, being uncomfortable is going to be one of them.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoy the TBT and enjoy Seth Greenberg and Fran Fraschilla. This has been the world's greatest podcast. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and give us a 5 or a 10 or whatever the hell the highest number is. All right, we'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.